Coach P's perspective.
Serve God, work hard, family coaching, play my part. Faith is something that I use every day, game changing moves. Sit back, relax, and listen. Inspiration is my mission. Twitch, got your back, Coach 96. We do got your back. PCO be in my brain, CSL is in my veins. Ain't no stopping or no blocking. Heaven's where I aim. In order to succeed, we cannot be lazy. Repping Jesus all the time, and yeah, we're going crazy.
Hey fam and friends, hey, welcome to Coach P's Perspective, where coaching, inspiration, and faith collide. This is your host, Coach Chad Parks, and thank you for joining me today. I'm a college All-American wrestler, coach, and the author of the best-selling book, Game Changing Moves. This background has allowed me to train elite athletes, coaches, and high performers from all walks of life. So if you need a pick-me-up, a kick in the pants, or a coach in your corner, I got you right here on Coach P's Perspective. Let's go. Hey, before we get started, I want to tell you about my favorite nutrition program, Champion Athletes. As an athlete, whether at the middle school, high school, collegiate, or professional level, you have special nutritional needs, and these vary depending on your sport and energy requirements. Nutrition and ideal body composition play an essential role in achieving your performance goals and maximizing your success. At Champion Athletes, certified experts in sports nutrition develop individualized plans for the student, amateur, and professional athlete. Their sports nutrition programs will optimize your diet and nutrition so that you can achieve your ideal body composition and maximize your performance. Here's what I love. Each program is tailored to meet your specific needs through a comprehensive assessment, continuous reevaluation, and one-on-one coaching. So whether you're just starting out, maybe you're an amateur athlete, or you have elite status, the Champion Athlete Sports Nutrition Programs will help you reach your maximum potential. Programs are available nationwide. And for us, if you are a listener of Coach P's Perspective, you'll receive a $50 discount for the initial program if you use the code COACHP. Their website is champions-athletes.com. So be sure to check out the website. You can also look at their Instagram page, which is at championathletes. I'll have those links in the show notes. Go check out my friends at Champion Athletes to get your nutrition right, to reach your maximum potential and performance. If today's message motivates you, inspires you, moves you into action, then please share this with somebody via social media, text, whatever works for you. You could also give us a rating or review on iTunes. And last but not least, be sure to check out my book, Game Changing Moves, Life Lessons from the Locker Room and Beyond. You can pick it up right now on Amazon or go to my publisher, crosstrainingpublishing.com. All right, y'all, let's jump into today's episode. All right, hey, welcome to another episode of Coach P's Perspective. Man, I am pumped. I have on Coach John Reeder, who is one of the, well, I want to say this. If you could think about someone that just gets you pumped up, excited, and just vibrant, ready to live, that's who we're about to interview right now. So a little bit of the background. Head assistant coach for Wisconsin, for the Badgers up there. Was a multi-time All-American for Iowa State, national champion for Iowa State, and then went on to wrestle some international, coached for Iowa State for a little bit, South Dakota State, and then now up at Wisconsin. So, Coach, man, thanks for being on.
Coach P, I'm excited to be here, brother. Super grateful to be on here. I know we've been trying to make this happen for quite some time, and just extremely excited for the opportunity to jump on here, man. Let's go.
Yeah, you bet. So, well, let's just do this, because in the wrestling world, we know who you are, but we have a lot of people in the business world and other areas that listen to the podcast. So if you would, man, just tell us a little bit about your background, where you grew up at, maybe how you got into sports, and then, of course, wrestling.
Okay. Yeah. So a little bit about my background. I'm from Davison, Michigan, about 5 minutes east of Flint. Just grew up in a very blue collar family. Mom and dad were the type of people that they would do anything for their kids. I have two siblings that we were the first priority, just to give us an unlimited amount of opportunities to go find our passions, whether it was sports, you know, academics, whatever it was, they were there, you know, we were put in that forefront. So just very, very grateful to be brought up in a family that they were selfless. You know, it wasn't about them. It was about their kids first. How I got into the sport of wrestling, I actually had an older brother who was 3 years older than me. So we did a lot of the Pop Warner sports together. You know, the baseballs, the footballs, and baseball was kind of one of our very first sports that we kind of got put into. My dad played Division I football, so you know, in his heart, he probably really wanted us to play football. But like I said, Pop Warner baseball is where we started. And we weren't your typical, you know, we couldn't focus very long, me and my brother. So they put us way out in the outfield where a T-ball, that ball was never going out there. And, you know, every single game, the two of us, we were wrestling in the outfield, just naturally, just two boys just fighting, you know. And sure enough, there was somebody that was at that game that came up to my father at the game and was like, listen, why don't you bring your kids out to, we got a club that we're starting here. Come on out, try it. And my dad brought us, and literally the rest is history. But it goes back even further than that. My dad has some history in the sport of wrestling. He's got a really cool story. Of kind of how he was introduced. He's from St. Charles, Illinois. He played football in high school. He had a bunch of buddies that wrestled. So he always kind of knew the sport and had a ton of respect for it. But it wasn't until he got to Indiana State where he played football. And he was a starting lineman. And the Indiana State coach came out to the football field one day, the wrestling coach. And that's the same time Larry Bird was playing basketball. And Bruce Baumgartner, everybody that's listening to this, you wrestling fans, you know who Bruce Baumgartner is. He was on the wrestling team at Indiana State at the time. And supposedly Bruce didn't have anybody to work out with. He was running through. He was mauling all of his training partners. And this guy was an animal, right? So the wrestling coach came out to the football team and he's like, listen, I need all you big guys to come in and just rotate on Bruce. And my dad had a ton of respect for wrestling. He's like, I'll sign up. Let's go. You know, and had really no idea what he was getting into. And supposedly the story goes, he mopped my dad from one end of the mat to the other. And my dad just, you know, fell in love with the sport. He was like, so much respect for wrestling. And, you know, sure enough, later down in the road, his two sons got a chance to wrestle. And literally the rest is history. For me, when I started wrestling, there was like this just instant passion for the sport. It was something different than baseball and football, where I didn't have to rely on anybody but myself. And I didn't understand that really early on. Like I said, I was very fortunate to have blue collar parents that just, their focus was give your best effort and keep showing up, that, you know, stay committed to the sports. But, I just had a natural attraction to the sport and I loved it. And, you know, the harder I worked, the more I was, you know, accomplishing these trophies at tournaments, and, just a natural fit for me, you know, to get that energy out. And, I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
Awesome. And that's, what a cool history, piece of history, your dad getting to work out with Bruce Baumgartner.
Right, you know? Right. So he goes back, man. I mean, there's so many crazy, like, connections from his era. You know, he was a football player in the summers. He did landscaping with Larry Bird. Like, him and Larry Bird used to drive around on a golf cart and do landscaping together. It's, like, just crazy, you know, yeah. Just crazy.
That's crazy. You know, and they say, you know, there's, like, 6 degrees of separation from everybody in the world. But, man, I think in the wrestling world, it's, like, 2 or 3 degrees of separation. Like, we're all connected somehow. It's pretty cool.
Absolutely. No doubt about it.
So, all right. So, you know, of course, you had to be a really good high school wrestler to go on and be a Division I wrestler. So, why Iowa State? How did that all come about?
So, again, let me kind of preface about kind of how I got to Iowa State. And again, my father was just, you know, my mom and dad were selfless. They put us in a situation to be around some really great coaches in high school. Roy Hall, Kent Elliott, guys that were legends in the sport in the state of Michigan, two Division I athletes that went on to be, you know, coaches at their alma maters. Their high school was Davidson. And, you know, to be able to high school athlete coming through and you got two Division I, you know, former Division I athletes as your coaches. Now being a coach, you don't see that at every high school. You just don't see that, right? So they had us prepared, and it was a seamless transition to college. You know, the commitment, the dedication, just the sacrifice that we were doing in high school, I saw that from a daily basis. That's how we were being trained. Obviously, you know, when we got to college, it was a hot, you know, the intensity level and the competition got a lot higher. But, man, just incredibly grateful for my opportunity to go through Davidson High School. And when I went through the recruiting process, you know, everybody, you know, I was open-minded to anywhere. Really, it didn't have a pinpoint on where I was going to go. I was a huge Michigan Wolverine fan when I was growing up. And my dad being a football guy, we grew up going to the big house and got recruited by Michigan. But it just, for one reason or another, it just didn't happen. And took my recruiting visit to Iowa State. When I got there, I met Kale Sanderson. He was hot off an Olympic championship. And Bobby Douglas was a legendary coach in himself, you know, bronze medalist, multiple time world team member, and just an incredible staff when I first got there. And even further back, man, I mean, in high school, I was a wrestling junkie. I was going through the magazines, and Iowa State was, you know, that was kind of their golden era. You know, you had Kale Sanderson, you had Cody Sanderson, Chris Bono, you know, Zach Thompson, all those guys that were in those magazines. You know, I was like, man, Iowa State is a really good team. So when they called, I was like, this is a dream come true. And, you know, one thing led to another, and I took my official visit, and I fell in love with Ames, Iowa. It's just a very similar town, a little bit larger scale than Davison kind of country. And I loved my experience. Obviously, I met my wife and just had a great, great student athlete experience at Iowa State.
Yeah. You know, it's funny as you go back through your name and some of those names. I mean, that was a great era for Iowa State wrestling, you know, and I mean, we go all the way back and people maybe they don't know wrestling as much. Like, hey, that's where Dan Gable actually wrestled at. He didn't wrestle at Iowa, right? He coached at Iowa. But, I mean, Iowa State has just this great tradition of wrestling. It's funny mentioning Bobby Douglas, too, because where I was wrestling in college and we're at the Cyclone Open, and I was wrestling someone from Iowa State. I don't know who. But, you know, normally you're nervous before you wrestle, right? And, like, I stepped on the mat. Like, once I step on the mat, like, I'm usually not nervous anymore. Step on the mat, like, I'm feeling good. And all of a sudden, I hear a voice. And I look up and Bobby Douglas was just jogging to the corner and he's yelling at his guy, let's go. And I literally got nervous because Bobby Douglas was like sitting in the corner, you know, just because I grew up like idolizing that guy. My dad's a coach. And yeah. So I was like, it's the first time a coach has ever made me nervous.
Absolutely. A little bit about Coach Douglas, man, just an incredible, incredible human being. The guy, honestly, I don't know if I've ever met somebody that knows more technical skills in the sport of wrestling than Bobby Douglas. Coach Douglas is literally probably forgot more technique than I'll ever learn. And just an encyclopedia of the sport, a true student of the sport. You know, I've got a lot of great stories of him, and man, there's so many guys that he coached that go unnamed, you know, Barry Weldon's. There's so many guys that came through that program that I idolized as a young kid. And when I got the opportunity to go there and meet Coach Douglas and him to come to my house, and I was like, I want to win a national title for this guy. I'm ready to run through a wall for him. But to go to Iowa State, if you think about it, it really transformed my career, right? I went to Iowa State and, you know, fast forward my junior year. A lot of people don't understand this. I had three different head coaches when I was at Iowa State. So I got recruited by Bobby Douglas. And when I came in, the transition happened and Coach Sanderson took over with his staff. And then going into my junior year, another transition happened. And that's when Coach Jackson and Coach Bono, and that's where my relationship started with Coach Bono, that now has led into this, you know, my coaching career and you know, an unbelievable friendship between the two of us. But I don't think it is a burden, you know, as an athlete, a lot of kids are like, man, I don't know how you did three different coaches. I was extremely grateful for the opportunity to learn from literally three legends of the sport, Bobby, Coach Jackson and Coach Kale Sanderson. And then you put in numerous amounts of their assistant coaches, just a crazy, you know, good experience. And I learned so much from each one of them. And I needed each one of them at those certain times. And I think it led to me winning a national title my senior year, no doubt.
Yeah. Yeah. That could be hard, but yeah, that's a blessing at the same time, man. I mean, that amount of coaches, the guys you just named, like you said, and along with their assistants, I mean, you're literally getting to learn the best from the best, and they all have a little different style, right? Unique coaching styles, unique wrestling styles. So awesome. Now, I want to jump into your coaching in a minute, but winning a national title, winning NCAA title, what was it like? I mean, did you know going into that national tournament, like, hey, I feel like I can win this title? Like, what was your thought process and what was it like to win it?
Right. So kind of, again, preface kind of my collegiate career, my freshman, sophomore year, I was an All-American my freshman, sophomore year. And now looking back on my career, I didn't really understand that, you know, going into my junior year, I think I was seeded third in the NCAA tournament. I had some injuries, some concussions that kind of held me back going into the NCAA tournament, but I wasn't an All-American my junior year, which was a heartbreaker for me. Got to the round of 12 and lost to a guy that I had beaten numerous times, you know, in my career. And it literally, I don't know if I would have been an NCAA champ is what I'm saying the next year, if this would not have happened. It brought me to my knees, really. It really humbled me. And, fueled a fire that was, I truly believe it was unstoppable. After I wasn't an All-American, there was something that I, you know, that was lit, that I was on a mission. I was on a mission. It was one match at a time. I know that's cliche, but it was, I told myself that time and time again. I was training for the next guy in front of me, and that was all that I cared about. And Coach Jackson is an incredible motivator, and I think he's one of the best technicians in the entire country. He really shored up a lot of my baseline skills. And my senior year, I was having fun. I cut no weight. You know, a lot of those injuries and concussions now as a coach, I don't tell my guys to cut weight like, you know, some of these older guys have done. And I experienced that my junior year where I wish I would have went back and changed that. But now as a coach, I can, you know, I can explain that, listen, here's an experience that I had that it didn't pay off. So my senior year, I went up to 174 and I was cutting no weight. I was 180 pounds wet and just loving life, coming in passionate about getting better in the sport. And I'm excited to help, you know, encourage my teammates. And that year went so fast. It went incredibly fast. Before I knew it, I was at the Big 12 tournament. But walking into the NCAA tournament, man, there was something. I'm not a cocky or humble or, you know, outgoing guy like that, but there was something about that tournament that I knew. I don't want to say I knew I was going to win, but I knew that I was the best guy in that weight. I just had to go out there and do it. I just had to go out there and prove it, you know, match after match. And I tell this to this day, I've never been more confident going into my NCAA final match than I have in any match. You know, there was something about it. Like there was just, it gives me goosebumps. As I was walking up on that podium, I was like, I'm not losing. I am not losing. You know, I'm going to give this guy every single ounce of energy in my body. He's going to really have to kill me to win, you know, and ended up being a bloodbath. And Nick Muchisteggi is a really good friend of mine now. And so my senior year went quick, really fast.
Some of this will connect to coaching philosophy as well, but as an athlete, like what do you think allowed you to develop that confidence?
Well, I think a lot of it was the mentors that were around me, right? I had a lot of great people that were around me, but first and foremost, it was my parents, right? I have some very supportive parents, and my now wife was in my ear all the time telling me you can do this. And, you know, I had a lot of really good support around me, even in the athletic department, whether it was our athletic director, who I have a great relationship with, and, you know, Marty Martinez, which is a sports psychologist, which I encourage, you know, my athletes to this day to take advantage of those kind of resources, because you never know which stone is, you know, needs to be overturned to help you accomplish the best version of yourself. And don't be too prideful to go out there and overturn every stone to make that possible. And I was willing to do whatever it took to get to that end goal of being a national champ. And, but, you know, at the same time, doing everything right is what I mean. You know, doing the nutrition right, doing the social life right, academics, athletics. I was all in on every platform, and whether that meant meeting with a psychologist, that was what I was willing to do.
I love it. You know, I love the, well, I just wrote it down, being all in, right? So that's huge. But also, a lot of times our pride or our ego get in the way in certain areas. Like you said, you're willing to turn over every single stone. And mindset, I work for wrestling mindset. I'm a coach for them. But mindset is so much more accepted today than it was even 5, 6, 7 years ago. And that kind of training. And it's huge, you know. Now, as I coach those things, and I'm a high school wrestling coach too. So as I coach my team or I work with individual athletes, like, man, like I wish I would have had this stuff when I was competing. I wish this would have been available. So it's incredible that you're almost ahead of your time jumping into doing that.
Right. And I'll tell you this too. A lot of that comes from just the support of Kevin Jackson. He kind of introduced me to the visualization and kind of the, you know, the meditation and kind of visualizing your matches. And he would walk us through, you know, 7-minute matches where I would vividly see myself attacking and getting to my go-to attack, or vividly seeing myself get my hand raised. And if you're able to do that, I mean, what an advantage you have on your opponents. And I didn't understand that concept until I saw him. And I was already 22 years old. You know, just being willing to do whatever it took to get there. And man, what an incredible resource that you can have if you're willing to jump in and do it.
Absolutely. All right. So let's talk about coaching. At what point did you feel like I'm a wrestler, but I think it's time to transition into coaching. And did you always know you want to be a coach? So kind of how did that transition happen?
Yeah. So kind of to go back, you know, I've got military in my family, and I always told myself if wrestling didn't ever turn out the way I envisioned it, or the doors didn't open, I was going military, hands down. I love that lifestyle. I love the structure. I love, you know, serving and the whole nine yards. But luckily, gratefully, you know, doors kept opening, and I always kind of had that. I've always been a guy that loves to be around people, you know, and just relationships. And I've always had a knack for the coaching side of things, and being able to encourage guys and lift up those around me is something that I feel like I just do naturally. And, you know, so when I was going through my career, my college career, I really didn't really know what I wanted to do as far as a career. I always knew that, again, I had the military, and again, my vision through college was I wanted to win an Olympic title. That was all I wanted to do, you know, an NCAA title and an Olympic title. So I really never focused on my career. It wasn't until I was post-grad that I really understood that I wanted to coach. And it came down to Coach Bono. You know, I was 2014. I'll never forget the phone call. 2013, sorry. And it was the year after the Olympic trials, and I went to the World Team trials, and I believe I got third or fourth. And, you know, it was, you know, the sixth or seventh time where I was the third place during the World Team trials. And, you know, as you know, in the United States, if you're not the number one guy, you're not, you know, you're not really, what are you doing? You know what I mean? And I was just newly married and a kid on the way, and I was living at the Olympic Training Center. I had no health insurance, and I was just, you know, which is dumb and very selfish on my part looking back on that. But that just kind of shows how committed I was and how dedicated I was to do whatever it took to be an Olympic champ. You know, I truly believed I was living the life to try to, you know, win an Olympic title. And I had a wife that was 1,000% behind me to do it. And I'll never forget the phone call. He called me and said, "Hey, I got a position that's open for you. And would you want to come out and check it out?" And he's like, I want to build this program with you. And I didn't have any intentions of becoming a coach at the time. And I only flew out to South Dakota State because it was out of respect for Chris Bono and the relationship that the two of us had built, and now being best friends. You know, I was like, I owe this guy a trip. So I came out and I trained for a couple of days with him and stayed with him and his wife and family. And I quickly fell in love with the vision that he had to build a program that was, you know, trying to win NCAA titles, put guys on the All-American stand, and at a program that was just about to be dropped at South Dakota State. So he had big goals, big dreams, and he had an administration that was behind him 1,000%. And I was like, let's go. You know, I turned to my wife and I said, I think this is where I want to make home base. And she said, let's go. You know, she had never had a hesitation, and the rest is really history. We spent four really, really good years in Brookings and built a program to top 12 in the country. You know, I think our first 2 years there, we were last in the NCAA tournament. You know, by the time we were done, we had, you know, a 12th place team finish and multiple time All-Americans and guys that were winning NCAA titles and Seth Gross. So just a great experience. And looking back on it, I'm extremely grateful for Coach Bono getting me into the coaching world, getting my, you know, feet wet, cutting my teeth in Brookings. And, you know, I absolutely love this profession, and I don't plan on leaving for a really long time.
What are some of the things that you and Coach Bono have as far as what you would consider to be pillars of your program? Things that you want your athletes to learn outside of technique and things like that, but things you want your athletes to learn for character, for school, human being, yep. Things that are going to help on the wrestling mat. What are some of the pillars that you guys are always driving home?
Absolutely. So number one, the two of us is just a trust in the relationship that the two of us had. And I'll put this against anybody in the country. I guarantee you, it would be pretty hard to find two guys that are more loyal to each other and just a close relationship. I mean, best friends, being able to be, you know, coaching, doing this together, and truly, you know, close friends. And but our program is built on hustle, effort, and attitude. That's what we preach to our guys day in and day out. And that is literally on every platform of your life, your social life, your academics, in your athletics, trying to be the best version of yourself. If you give me your best hustle, effort, and attitude in everything you do every single day consistently, I promise you, you're going to be in the best position to be the best version of yourself. We might not win. I'm not going to guarantee you that we're going to win an NCAA title, but when the day is said and done, you're going to hang your hat on. You gave it everything. You overturned every stone to be the best version of yourself. And no doubt about it, we're guys that that live that lifestyle. And again, Seth Gross now being on the staff, he is the epitome of that as well. And we're so excited for this guy. He's got a really, really promising and exciting coaching career himself.
Yeah, that's a lot of iron sharpens iron right there, man, with you guys all on the staff together. So I want to get in here in a minute. You know, I know that you and Coach Bono did a ultra marathon, and I want to talk about that here in a minute. But what's the importance in your mind? And every coach can't do this, right? Maybe you have a coach who's older, later in his career. He can't maybe physically do as much with his athletes. But, you know, Coach Bono is a little muscle head. Yeah, you know, you're rocked out. Seth Gross, you know, still just got done competing. Not necessarily even that a coach has to get in there and wrestle, but coaches just staying in great shape and exercising and being the example. What's the importance of that for you guys? Because you guys live it.
Yeah. So, I mean, our staff might be a little bit different than others. And it's not necessarily, you know, one way fits all or one way is right and one way is wrong. And, you know, I've got a lot of great relationships with coaches around the country that don't necessarily, you know, put themselves on the mat very much anymore. And, you know, whether it's one reason or not, but for us, I speak on our behalf. I know the two of us, you know, Seth Gross and I, we wrestle every single day. We lift with the team. We run with the team. We wrestle every day. I'm 33 years old. I'm beat up and banged down, but I absolutely love to work out with the guys. Like, again, it's a relationship thing. There's nothing that beats the camaraderie and the shared suffering that you get in a locker room with guys. And, you know, being able to be in the suffering, in the wrestling room, in the weight room, the whole nine yards. I still love that. And I enjoy it. I look forward to it. And again, Seth Gross, he's a world-class athlete. You know, he's an animal, and he runs hot. He does it every day too. But Coach Bono, man, he's 47 years old. This guy's an animal. He still does it. Still does it all. And just a tireless worker. And the three of us, you know, I think it's more or less, it's just, we enjoy doing it. Yeah. You know, I think we do it regardless. You know, and yeah, I think it's just, that's just kind of our DNA. And that's every wrestler, right? I think that you get to a point in your life where you kind of slow down only because you're kind of the injuries that you've, you know, kind of accumulated over the years. I think every wrestler I've ever met, every coach I've met, I would be shocked if they ever told you that they miss competing. Or they, you know, they don't miss competing. I think they all miss competing. I think they all miss that grind and being able to get in there and, you know, sweat and you know, suffer together. So that's what makes our sport so special, man. And I truly believe that people don't understand that until you're really in it, you know? So again, the ultra marathon, wait until we get into the stories about this, dude. It's just crazy.
Yeah, crazy. That's where I'm going next. So thanks for the lead in. So yeah. All right. One of my assistant coaches, I'm 43. He's 43, 44. We both still train really hard. You know, we do all these things, but he is an ultra marathoner, loves to run. He does all that. So I've got to listen to some of his stories, but yeah. So how did you and Coach Bono decide to go and do this ultra 100 and then tell me all about it?
So to make a long story real short on how we got into it. So during quarantine, during the COVID, when it first hit, I mean, obviously you got wrestlers who are really getting anxious and, you know, antsy at home. And we're trying to figure out ways to, you know, kind of get miserable and get exhausted. Obviously you got the pavement outside to go run on, but we got in this Facebook group. His brother has a buddy that started this Facebook group. And it was kind of this group that was a motivating group, got people to get out during quarantine. And, you know, it was like a 5K a day in May is what it started to be. Well, anyways, long story short, we met a guy in that group that was kind of like-minded, right? He was real like-minded. We built a relationship right away and we were sending messages back and forth. And one thing led to another, man. And we built a really good relationship with a crazy individual and, found out that he does 100 miles. He's trying to do 100 miles in every single state is what he's trying to do. Nice. We built a relationship. I said, listen, if you ever come to Wisconsin, Coach Bono and I, we will jump in. We'll do 10 miles with you. And mind you, you know, when I'm doing this, I'm like, I've never ran more, you know, I've ran 10 miles once in my life prior to this. I'm like, I can do 10, you know, that was kind of my max at the moment in my mind. And, you know, I was like, I looked at Coach Bono and he's like, yeah, I can do 10. We'll try to do 10. You know, we thought that was going to be a big deal. Well, that was like 3 or 4 months prior to the race day. And, you know, I was like, every day I was like, man, something was just kind of itching at me. I was like, you know, Bono, if he's coming, you know, and this race was in August, I was like, if he's coming, why don't we just do the whole thing? You know, we're not going to do 10 miles. Let's just do it all. And, you know, for about a month and a half, he's like, yeah, you're crazy. Stop talking about it. We're not doing it. And one thing led to another, man. We were sitting at the Olympic trials, getting ready for these guys to get, go on the mat at the Olympic trials in, this past year. And I looked at him, I said, listen, it's go time. If you sign up, or if I sign up, you're signing up and we're going to do this thing. We're doing the whole 100 miles. And he did it, man. He signed up and we got really, really serious. And, you know, we trained, you know, so we thought was the right way. And incredible experience. I've never done anything crazier or harder in my entire life than this 100 miles. And mind you, so an ultra marathon is not necessarily just 100 miles. I guess it's anything over 26.2. Is that right?
Yeah.
So it's anything in between. So I didn't realize that. And when we signed up for this race, I didn't realize that 100 miles is going to be like as hard as it was. It was legit hard, legit hard. So when we got through about 26.2, just to kind of start the race out, we got through 26.2 and we were cruising, you know. And this guy that, you know, came out and did the race with us, he said, you know, for months, he's like, I want you guys training at 12 minute pace, which is fairly slow, right? It's pretty slow. I was like, I can do that all day. So we start training at like, you know, 9-10 minute pace. You know, just because we're like, we're going to get in even better shape. So when we get out on the course, we're going to be killing this thing. And we did that for months and months and months. And, you know, when we came to race day, it was, we started running like 7.5-8 minute pace with this guy. It was just, dude, I have so many memories bubbling up in my head right now. The ultra community is a whole different community than I've ever been exposed to. When I came to the start line at this race, so if you can envision just a bunch of runners underneath this park pavilion and the race director's like, you know, we're going to go over here. We're going to start the race. And it was a professional race. And I'm eyeballing all the people around me. I'm like, I'm going to beat that guy. I'm going to beat that guy. Pretty soon I'll be stepping on his throat. And you know, I was ready to compete. Right. And 26 miles into the race, like that whole thing changed. The whole thing changed. It became like, I didn't care about anybody else but us. It became extremely difficult. The entire community, when I was passing people, they were like, what do you need? You know, do you need anything? It was just a different community than wrestling, right? When you're in a wrestling room or a wrestling competition, you're ready to compete. You know, I'm ready to compete against everybody in there. Just a very different community, but extremely grateful for what we did, man.
So, awesome. You know, So you said a couple times you just passed 26 miles. So you just passed a marathon.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's going through your mind at that point and what's happening with your body at that point? Because you're just a little ways in of 100.
So there are so many things that went wrong in this race for me specifically. 26.2 miles in, and that's kind of where our buddy that came out and did this race, that's kind of where he left us. I don't want to say left us. It's just kind of where he kept going and we couldn't keep his pace anymore. Mm-hmm. And at that moment, I'll never forget this to the day I die. It, you know, just kind of the little moment when Coach Bono and I looked at each other and we're like, what are we going to do? We're going to keep going or we're going to quit or what are we doing? And there was never a moment in the race where we really thought we were going to quit, but you know, there were some really hard times. There was no times we were going to quit, but we looked at each other and we're like, what are we going to do? You know? And you know, it was instantly, like there was no hesitation. It was like the quickest little pep talk between the two of us. And we're like, dude, I got you. You got me. We're going to dominate this thing. We just got to, you know, get our bearings straight, get the GPS on, you know, set the watch and put the music on and let's roll. And, you know, looking back, man, from 26.2 to the 100 mile finish line, those memories with Coach Bono will live with me forever, man. You want to talk about shared suffering and taking a relationship to a whole new level. The things that we endured together and shared together, the experiences that we shared together are just absolutely incredible, man. Absolutely incredible. But my body didn't shut down until about 60 miles in.
Okay.
And we were cruising. We were cruising for the first 60 miles. We never stopped. You know, when we rolled into the 60 mile check station, I all of a sudden I like full body cramped going into the aid station, you know, and I was to a T. We got with our nutritionist here at Wisconsin. So every aid station, I had my own stuff, whether it was liquids, you know, he had it all dialed in to science for my body. I just needed to take it in. That's all I needed to do. So when we came into this aid station, something was way off and I full body cramped walking into this aid station. And, that's kind of where my body spiraled out of control. I didn't want to look at any of the stuff. You know, I had like peanut butter and jellies that were all pre-made for me and I didn't want to eat a peanut butter and jelly anymore. And these aid stations had like gummy bears, you know, pickles and all kinds of crazy stuff. And I went over to the aid station and just got whatever looked good. Mm-hmm. And it really hurt me, you know, nutritionally, it hurt me because all of a sudden now my body was all out of whack. I just put in all kinds of crazy stuff. But we kept on going, right? We kept on going. And I didn't have that experience again until about 92 miles in. And I hit another body cramp. And I'll never forget this too. It was at the bottom of a hill coming into an aid station. And a lady, you know, the 92 miles prior each aid station, the aid workers never run out to the people. You know, you always run in and then they're helping you. They're great. But this lady must have saw me and she saw how bad I was, you know, and hurting. And I was full body cramping and she ran out to me and just, you know, helped me, gave me some salt water and all kinds of good stuff and said, get going. You know, you got 8 miles to go and we got it done. But the body damage that I took from it, I mean, this is pretty graphic, but the aftermath of the race was probably where it hurt the most. You know, I did not anticipate the damage that I was going to do to my body as far as like, you know, how bad I hurt after the race. I had no idea that I was going to hurt the way I did. When we came across the finish line, I'm sure you saw videos and pictures. When we came across the finish line, my wife was there. She carried, you know, kind of, you know, helped me walk over to this blanket in this park. And I had some strangers, a couple of our buddies, you know, lower me down onto a blanket. And after I sat down, I was laying there for probably 45 minutes to an hour. When they woke me back up to go home, I couldn't get on my feet. Like I couldn't put any ounce of pressure on my feet. I thought my shins were broke is what it felt like.
Yeah.
And you know, my ankles were broke. And we thought we did it all right. You know, the equipment that we had, we were wearing spandex shorts, you know, compression socks. So I didn't realize that, you know, what I had done to myself, I was pushing all that fluid into my knees. And so my knees looked like basketballs, you know, so I had so much pain in my knees and hips and, this is where it gets even crazier. So I got home and it's just my wife and I, you know, and she gets me in the car and I get, you know, I'm getting into my garage and she lowers me onto the garage because I can't walk. I can't put any ounce of pressure on my feet. And I army crawl into my house and, you know, she puts a sheet on the mudroom in our, you know, first landing in the house. I lay on this land and she pulls me into the house, man. That's how bad it was. Yeah. That's how bad it was. Just crazy. So I was stranded. She got me into a lazy boy chair in our house. And I was stranded in a lazy boy for at least 24 hours. I couldn't get up, you know, and I had all kinds of plans. You know, we had a little party that was planned. We had, you know, lunch with that buddy of ours the next morning. I couldn't do any of it. I could not get on my feet. Luckily I got into a bath and was able to kind of loosen up. And I think 48 hours later, I was on crutches getting the recruits' houses, and which is an even crazier story too. 48 hours later, Coach Bono's picking me up. We're going to a recruit's house and both of us are on crutches. And, you know, we pull up to a recruit's house and I'm like, listen, dude, we're not crutching up to this kid's house. You leave the crutches in here and we're going to hobble up there. You know, you're going to suck it up. We're not going to use these crutches. So just crazy, crazy experience. And you would be surprised how many people have came out of the woodwork since we've done this race. And we're like, dude, just tell me, how do I get involved with this? I want to experience what you guys felt. It doesn't do it justice unless you felt it, man. It's crazy, crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I can only imagine, you know, I've done some decent distant runs. I've not done the 100. Like I said, one of my assistant coaches does it, but you know, I'm just thinking like, man, what are your feet like afterward? Yeah. What are your knees like, your hips like afterward?
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. When
one of the best things about the whole experience too, was the unknown. right? It was really truly an unknown for us. I mean, like I said, we had never run more than 10 miles. And even when we were out on the race, people would pass us and we would have the bib that said, hey, this is a 100-miler. Because this race organization, they had a bunch of different distances that were going on that week, like a 100K, an actual 100-miler, a 50K, you know, a full marathon. They had all these going on. So each person had different bibs, colors. And when they came across our bib color, they're like, these guys are doing 100 miles. You know, how was training leading up to it? Have you ever ran this far before? What number 100 milers is this for you? And we're like, this is the first one. Yeah, I've never ran more than 10 miles. And they're like, they looked at us like we were, you know, they just saw a ghost.
Yeah.
You know, so it was a crazy experience. The unknowns for me were what really made it exciting. You know, now if I did it again, I would kind of anticipate what's coming. And I had no idea that I was going to come to 92 and literally full body cramp, you know, and really have to make a decision on what I was going to do. And those guys that do those ultra marathons, man, they're crazy. They're nuts. I mean, I saw a lot of crazy stuff out on that course. Just tough girl, tough women, tough men. I mean, you want to talk about some savages. And some of the most, you know, humbling experiences for some of these guys too. Like I'll never forget, we came to an intersection and if you can envision a dirt path, you know, going straight through the woods, that's what this course was. It was literally like that. So at night it was pitch dark, you know, and you can imagine over 100 miles, people get so spread out. So when we were in the woods, it was pitch dark, but I'll never forget coming to this intersection. There was a dim little light. And this guy was sitting on the corner of this intersection. And I saw him from a distance. And as we got closer, I was like, something must be wrong with this guy. And like I said, help or emergency personnel, it would take them quite a while to get to wherever you were. I saw this guy coming. I'm like, I'm going to ask him if he needs help. And when I came up to him and asked him, he's like, no, I quit. My wife's coming to pick me up. And I'll never forget that, man. And like, I looked at Coach Bowen, I was like, we can't be that guy.
Yeah.
We can't be that guy. So just crazy experience and, you know, forever grateful for that and excited to do the next challenge.
That's awesome. You know, wrestlers often have a confidence, and I don't want to say an arrogance or a cockiness. I just want to say a confidence because you've put in so much training, right? And you take on so many unknowns in the sport of wrestling all the time. Every time you step on the mat, it's an unknown, but so doing something like this, completely outside your wheelhouse, outside your normal training routine, just has to add another layer of like, I don't know if I can succeed in everything in life, but I think I'm willing to take it on, or I could take it on and probably figure out a way.
No doubt. Well, it just shows you the power of your mind, right? Yeah. I never let myself expand my mind far enough to say, hey, I can do 100 miles. Right. It's just self-limiting. Right. I never wanted to run more than 10 miles. And I never thought I would run a 100 miles in my life. I never thought that. Mm-hmm. Right. So just shows you how powerful your mind is. If you believe in yourself and you allow yourself to, you know, do it, you can do a whole lot of stuff that you might not think you can. But getting outside the box and getting uncomfortable, that was the biggest thing. You know, being able to come across that finish line where that was hands down, put any wrestling experience, any training, any hard training you would consider that I've ever been through and you times by a million. That was the experience I had in that 100 miles. When I came across that finish line, it was the most gratifying and the most rewarding experience I've ever had in my life because I was at the lowest when it came to the way my body felt and having to truly say, hey, keep putting one foot in front of the other, keep showing up. No doubt in my mind, I know now as a coach, it helped me to accomplish anything you want to accomplish, man. You just got to believe you can do it. And be willing is really the word, is be willing to do it. You know, and going through the race, I was lucky enough to have him next to me and we never left each other one time. I was lucky enough that when I was in a really bad situation, whether it was, you know, hurting bad or I was cramping or whatever it may be, he was at a really good spot. And I think that just naturally happened because we were trying to take care of each other. You know, I don't think we could have let each other be bad at the same time. Mm-hmm. He was bad, I was good, and I was taking care of him. And when I was bad, he was taking care of me. And like I said, man, the shared suffering that we experienced together, it'll live with me forever. And to see our guys experience what we were going through, to see what we were going through and see their support and to see what they said after the race. They saw a motivated Chris Bono. They saw a motivated John Reeder that was ready to do whatever it took to get across that finish line. And there was multiple times when we were in the race that we had to remind ourselves when it got real tough. You know, there was times I would not yell at him, but I would be like, you know, listen, this is why we signed up for this, because it's hard, you know, and doing hard things is okay. You can do hard things. We didn't expect it to be easy. And, you know, to just keep reminding yourselves of that. And we really did break it into little chunks in that race, which I think helped us. There was never a time where we were like, all right, you know, we're 30 miles in, we got 70 left. It was never that kind of mindset. The way we broke it down is every aid station was about 7 miles apart, 7-8 miles apart. So it was always about putting one foot in front of the other and getting to the next aid station, you know, just keep stacking those little wins on top of each other. You know, and when we got to each aid station, I got a chance. My wife was part of our crew station. So getting that energy from her and getting that energy from Chris's family and, you know, our friends that were there supporting and our guys that were out there helping, you know, just an incredible, incredible experience, man. And like I said, you put anything I've ever done in my entire career, a national championship, this is way more rewarding than anything I've ever done in the sport of wrestling. And I know that's a lot to say, and, but just an incredible experience because we've never done anything like this, man. And it was just something so new to us that got us motivated. And it really has opened doors to friendships and relationships in a whole new world, right? You know, we've met so many amazing people in this running community that's opened doors to, you know, like just this past weekend, there's a guy that we met through this running thing that, you know, we spent the weekend here in Madison, you know, at the Army football game. His son's plays on the football team, and you'd be surprised how many doors it opens, you know, just getting out there and getting uncomfortable.
Yeah. It's cool. You said, well, first off, you said doing hard things is okay. I love that. You know, sometimes we got to remind ourselves, and some of us are, you know, like to work out and push yourself, you know, whatever, but sometimes you got to be reminded of that or remind your athletes like, hey, it's supposed to be hard, right? Like you said, we signed up for this. But it's cool that you said, you know, you guys, so I think a lot of times when we think of goals, like we all want to be national champions. Everybody wants to be a state champion, national champion, and you have this broad outcome that you want, but you can't control those things. Well, you can't control your effort, your attitude, your hustle, your effort, your attitude, like you guys say. But you broke it down in small chunks, which is what we ultimately, I mean, if you look at the Navy SEALs when they're going through Hell Week, most of the guys that make it through were like, hey, we're not thinking about a week. I was just thinking about making it to breakfast and then making it to lunch and then making it to dinner. So it was a small chunks in a wrestling match. You know, if we're winning every 15 or 20 seconds versus like, I got to win the entire match now when you don't. Right. So we win every position or every situation. So in life, really? Right, we have these big time goals maybe, but it's all those little things we can't control along the way end up leading to that outcome, or at least put us in the best position to reach that outcome, which is
You hit it perfectly. You know, I mean, for me, I know as a high school kid, my eyes were set on winning world and Olympic titles, being a Hodge Trophy winner, winning four NCAA titles. That was my goals. And I know I had really big goals, but I truly believe and you need to set your goals as high as possible and go chase them, man, fearlessly chase them. And that was my attitude for everything I did. And, you know, but when you do that, there's a standard that you live by. And that's a daily standard with everything you do, the way you carry yourself, the way you treat people. It's just a standard. It's a championship standard is what we call it. And, it's doing the right things in every aspect of your life to be the best version of yourself, that hustle, effort, and attitude, you know, to give yourself that best chance. And no doubt about it, man, you have to. I think you'd be crazy if you try to chase those dreams without living a standard of consistency and commitment to doing the right things. It's not an every other day thing, or it's not when it's convenient type of lifestyle. It's commitment, man. It's this is who you are, and this is your goals, and you're not ashamed of them. And you let people know, and you put your goals up everywhere you possible to let people see them. They hold you accountable. You know, you let somebody know you want to be a 4-time NCAA champ, a world Olympic titleist. People treat you different. They hold you to a standard. You know, they're not going to let you go downtown and drink 27 beers and punch people in the face, or, you know, just live a different lifestyle, right? Something that's not conducive to being a champion. And we tell our guys that, you know, we're very open about talking about our goals, and which I think is very, very important. If you want to talk about your goals, we're going to hold you accountable. You know, whether it's, you know, as simple as putting on that singlet or you want to be an NCAA champ, I'm going to hold you accountable to those. Mm-hmm. So, no doubt about it. You've got to break them up and you got to attack each goal. And it's really a, truly a daily, it's a daily standard, a daily process. No doubt about it.
Yeah. So you say in great shape, what is just real quickly, what is your daily training like right now? You know, your kind of non-negotiables that you're going to do each day for your fitness, for your spiritual health, fitness, any of those things, daily yes. non-negotiable habits.
Right. So I think really to, I'd be remiss if I didn't tell you this. It really, my day is set. My day starts kind of the night before. Mm-hmm. Everything I do in preparation to get out the door in the morning. And I truly believe in that. I set myself up for success every single night by, I set out my supplements. I set out my breakfast that I have right away. I set out my coffee. I set out my plan, or I set out everything in my clothes. So when I wake up and that alarm clock hits, I hit that alarm clock and everything is set out, you know, and I'm not scrambling to find what I'm wearing. I'm not scrambling to find my supplements. I'm not scrambling to find what's for breakfast. It's boom, boom, boom. And I get out the door and kind of, you know, my non-negotiables right now is where we're at in our season is, you know, we're kind of finishing up our preseason. You know, we're running and lifting, you know, 3-4 times a week. We're on the mat, you know, 5 times a week. And I do every single workout with the guys. And, you know, it kind of depends on where we're at in the season, whether it's, you know, a little higher or lower volume, or we're gearing up for a match. But I follow the same plan as our team. And I love that. I think I'll do that as long as my body will allow me to. But I truly believe, and I tell my guys this all the time, and I'll tell anybody, your day really starts the night before. Mm-hmm. If you can set yourself out, and I know it's as simple as, you know, setting your clothes out. I know that sounds really, you know, goofy, but if you'd be surprised how focused you are in the morning, how detailed you are in the morning, and how efficient you are in the morning, if everything is set out and there's no guessing, you know, that's kind of who I am. I'm a structured guy. And, you know, when I wake up, man, it's boom, boom, boom. And here we go. Let's go attack. So 4:45 is kind of my go-to every single morning. I like to get up, have a cup of coffee, see the sunrise, and then I'm on my way into work.
Yeah, it's funny you said that. I'm all about efficiency, and maybe it's what it is, but I also set all my stuff out the night before. I have all my clothes set out, and I try to teach my children that as well.
So. Oh, yeah. I get made fun of a lot as a kid, and, you know, I think that just came from my parents. But, you know, even in college, even, you know, my wife, you know, now does it, but she's always like, what are you doing? You know, what, you know, and I want it all boom, boom, boom. This is what's going to happen. You know, like I said, every category is hit. You know, I'm looking at what's on the schedule for the day, and, you know, it's constantly trying to figure out ways to help our athletes get to their goals. You know, every day, like I said, I say win the day a lot and all my stuff. And, you know, I'm just myself on social media. I really am. And that's who I am. And trying to win the day means for me is just trying to be the best husband, father, coach, mentor, that I can be to these guys, and to really help them accomplish their goals. And like I said, it all funnels back into living that standard of a champion and that hustle, effort, and attitude. So,
yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to give you just a few kind of quick hitter questions here.
Let's go.
All right. So who's on your speed dial and why?
Who's on my speed dial? I say my wife, number one, is on my speed dial, but you know, I think that's a given, right? But I stay in close contact with our staff, Coach Bono and Coach Gross, and my family. And like I said, I'm a huge family guy. So my family's always on speed dial. I'm always checking in on them, but speed dial is, you know, gotta be my staff and family for sure.
All right. What, and I don't want you to be humble on this. All right. What is your genius? I believe God's gifted us all. What is your genius?
What is my kind of attribute? I would say it's just kind of, I would say it's just being in relationships. It no doubt about it. I truly believe, I don't want to, like I said, I don't like to boast or anything like that, but I feel like that is something that, you know, God has gifted me, you know, the ability to speak and talk to anybody and build genuine relationships. You know, and I believe that is a huge part of coaching is being willing to build relationships. And, you know, winning teams build championship teams through trust and relationships. That's first and foremost, you know, and you're not going to have a championship team if you have no relationships and no trust. So That would probably be mine for sure.
Absolutely. Awesome. All right. You can answer one of these or you can answer all three. It's up to you. All right. But I want you to tell me about a hero, a hardship, or a highlight, or a little of each. Hero, hardship, highlight.
Hero, absolutely. My father is Dean Reeder. Is just hands down. He's been my hero since I was a little guy. And every boy looks up to their father. And I still look up to my dad every single day. And just the selfless person that him and my mother were to give me and my siblings the opportunities that we have. It changed my life. It gave me a career, and it enabled me to be the person I am today. And I am forever grateful for him putting me into the sport of wrestling that really gave me the attributes and characteristics of somebody that can do anything they want as long as they put their mind to it. You know, I truly believe wrestlers are the ultimate employee, man. They're reliable, they're humble, they're loyal, they'll do whatever you want, they'll run through a wall for you. And that's what you want. So absolutely, hands down, my hero is my father. Hardships, easily, probably my junior year, the NCAA tournament, not being an All-American, and you know, ended up not being a four-time All-American because of that situation. But I, again, to flip it and make it a positive, I truly believe if I didn't have that hardship, I don't know if I would have been an NCAA champion. I don't know if that fire would have been as lit, as hot as it was my senior year. And I was on a mission, not only just to win an NCAA title. I wanted to dominate every single person I put on, you know, was on that mat with me. I think I went 39-0, and I think I had, you know, 30 bonus point matches in my senior year. It was just, I was on a mission to just, you know, max out everything I had in my senior year. Awesome. And what was the last one?
Highlight,
hands down, highlight of my, you know, are you talking about career?
Anything you want.
Meet my wife. You know, I think that she's a rock star and just an incredible human being. And she's, you know, for a wrestling coach, there's a lot of times where you're not necessarily around all the time, right? You're on the road, you recruit, and there's sacrifice. But I have a wife that's 1,000% behind me, and I've got two kids that I love to death. And we're at a really, really good age. I got a daughter who's 5 years old and a son who's 3. And to even expand on that, the highlight too is she's my wife, and I've got an amazing support system in my direct family, but the family that we've developed and expanded here at Wisconsin with Coach Bono and Coach Gross and all of our families, how tight they are. You know, it's priceless, man. It's absolutely priceless. You know, they basically got, you know, a couple sets of moms and dads, you know, my kids do, you know, in those guys. So it's really cool to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. Cause when you guys have the family atmosphere, that bleeds right over to your wrestling program. So those that are listening that maybe like thinking about, hey, where they want to go wrestle in college, you know, if you go to Wisconsin, you know, that's what you're going to have. Real quick. I didn't want to forget whenever you and Coach Bono were just got off your crutches and hobbled up to that house, that recruit was either super dedicated or he was like, those guys are crazy. I'm not sure I can wrestle there. Or he was like, heck yeah.
Yeah, man. I'll never forget too. I know exactly where we were, and obviously NCAA rules, I can't talk about who the recruit was, but walking into his house, he had followed our race. He knew what we had been through, and just to kind of see the commitment that there was never going to be a chance for us to cancel that recruiting visit. We were dedicated to that person and his family, and it would be an incredible honor to coach anybody here at Wisconsin. But when you come here, you're going to have a loyal coaching staff, guys that'll run through a wall for you, that'll do anything to help you accomplish your goals, both on and off the mat. You know, and just to be the best version of yourself, man. We always tell our athletes and our recruits, we can't promise you a national championship, but I promise you, I'll give you every ounce of energy I have to help you accomplish your goals and to be the best version of yourself on and off the mat. And how can you not want that? How can you not want that?
Absolutely. So, well, Coach, man, thank you so much. It's been a blessing to have you on here. Where can we follow you on social media?
Social media, I'm on everything. You can find me Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. And I encourage you to reach out to me. I'm very open. And, you know, I try to get to every single message I get. I'm an open book. I put my family on there. Like I said, I'm an open, transparent guy. You can reach out to me at John_Reader, J-O-N, on Instagram, Twitter. Reach out to me, say hello. And Coach P, man, I cannot thank you enough for this. I know you're doing a fantastic job. And for you to take a couple minutes out of the day, dude, I'm super grateful.
Yeah, well, thank you. I appreciate it. And I'll make sure I put your social media and the Wisconsin website. I'll make sure I put your wrestling website on the show notes. So again, thanks for being on. It's a blessing. And I said at the beginning, and it's true, you are a ball of energy, and you know, you bring light into everything you do, man. You bring light into social media, which we need it. And then you bring light with your voice and everything you do. So I'm grateful just to be able to do this.
I appreciate that. I appreciate it.
Yeah. All right, everybody, listen. Been another episode of Coach P's Perspective. May God bless you, smile upon you, give you peace. Till next time, we're out. Hey there, friends. If you are a wrestler, jiu-jitsu athlete, grappler of any sort, MMA fighter, weightlifter, any of the above, I want you to go check out my friends at terragrappler.com. These are hands down the best wrestling shoes I've worn. I've been competing my entire life. I wear these to wrestle in. I wear these while I'm weightlifting. Pretty much any kind of training that I do, I'm rocking my Terra Grapplers. You can go to terragrappler.com, and if you use the code COACHCP10, you'll get $10 off of your order. The link is also in the show notes, so go check out my friends at terragrappler.com.
Podcast complete, now me working overtime. I'm just a vessel for the spirit. When it's in me, then I shine. If the clay gets broken, he makes some whole new pottery. Repent for your sins, tell Satan to stay up off of me. With a new step, CSL rep.